Once upon a time, there were four little rabbits.
How old are you, Johnny? She asked.
16.
We few, we happy few, we band of brothers.
It was the best of times. It was the worst of times.
A wise old king once said, "Of the making of books, there is no end." How true today. Of the overabundance of writing published each year, what's worth reading? The answer is simple. Read only the best. Come join the discussion on Just the Best Literature.
Hello again, everyone. Thanks for listening in today. Well, I do have some comments on our Utopian series, and this is from the Northeast United States. And it says, the book Utopia probably was the worst book I've ever tried to read. Now, I understand that it was going to be a little difficult, he said, but just looking at the book made me ill. The author's idea of a utopian society reminded me so much of Big Brother and a socialist society. I also felt it was a lecture on his particular religious beliefs, which I strongly disagree with. For writing this book, Henry did the right thing. And so he's talking about eventually Thomas More got his head cut off. So anyway, everyone has a right to their own opinion. I still think it's a valuable book, but I'm not surprised it's affected some people that way. Well, today we are moving forward with our utopian and dystopian series. And today what we're going to do is we're going to start to talk about or introduce George Orwell's 1984. When I was planning this series, when I decided to do 1984, I had just come across a book. I really enjoy reading the New York Times book list. And there was a book that came. It just really struck me. And it's by Thomas E. Ricks, and it's titled Churchill and Orwell. Now, I thought that was kind of a fascinating title. And because I knew we were going to do Orwell's book, I really thought, wow, this could be interesting. In the future, I also want to do some of Churchill's work, and probably will probably do his considered one of his best books is called My Early Life, and it's really kind of like an autobiography of his first 25 years. And so we'll do that at a later time. But this book by Ricks, I found it a really amazing book and just really interesting. It compares, what he does is he compares the two lives of these British, famous British men, really. And the reason why he does this is he feels that they both have had such an impact on the Western world that they're worth certainly, you know, paying a little bit more attention to. But he also talks about their writing and their writing styles. And that's just, to me, when you can get two authors like that and hear they're both British, they grew up in very similar fashion, then you could begin to compare their writing. That's really kind of fascinating read for me. But I think I've said this in the past at JBL, and I mean, this is a podcast that does focus on literature. It does focus on reading. And as I teach my students here at Herbert W. Armstrong College, they really have to understand the background of an author if they're really going to understand his work. And we are shaped by our environment. And, you know, there's little sayings that the child is father of the man. And so you can also say that the child or how you grow up is going to influence how you view the world and how you're going to write if you're a writer. And so to understand any author's writing fully, you really must understand the background of that author's life. Now, it is really kind of amazing to me when I got into this book to learn that Winston Churchill and George Orwell did grow up in very similar ways. And I'm going to use parts of Rick's book to help introduce that to you or to introduce Orwell to you. And I think when we maybe compare both Churchill and Orwell for a little while, it'll show you what drove Orwell to write a dystopian novel like 1984. Now, it's not an easy, I think it's easy to read, but it's not, the concepts in it or what the story that you read is not an easy story to, let's say, put up with. And a few comments down the road here in this program, I'm going to show you that it's really more like a dystopian horror story. And I know the 60-plus panel is busy reading it, and both Mr. Hope and my wife have said, oh, this is, it's really hard to get to the end of the book. But I just want to tell you that Thomas Ricks tells us that Winston Churchill really enjoyed the novel. And in fact, it is on record that Winston Churchill actually read the book twice. He liked it so much. So he obviously saw some value in it. And really, the 1984 does have a lot to do with government. And if we remember back to our last two programs, or maybe I should say all of the programs that we've been talking about in terms of utopian and dystopian literature, government is one of the key elements of both books, both the utopian genre and the dystopian genre. So it's not unreasonable that these two men would maybe write the way they did. Orwell actually was in the government of the British Empire. He was an imperial policeman. And of course, we know that Churchill ended up being Prime Minister of England and was in different government offices along the way. But one thing I think maybe to help you when you get into Orwell's book, 1984, you ought to listen to my last two programs on my final thoughts on Moore's Utopia. And just to tell you that you can take confidence that the world is not going to become, like the world in 1984. Well, I shouldn't say that the world won't. There'll probably be some areas of the world will be like that. But, a much better world is coming. And, we know that the world is going to break out into utopia, and it's going to begin, very soon. So what is interesting, though, I think, is although the two men never met, they really never did meet in their lives, I do think they were very much aware of each other, and they had a deep appreciation for each other. And if you've started to read 1984, you'll probably realize, and maybe you haven't made this connection, but George Orwell did give the main character of this book the name Winston. It's Winston Smith instead of, obviously, Winston Churchill. And so, I do think, that's it. I never put that together until I read this book. And so it is really very fascinating. I want to read you a quote now from Thomas Ricks, and this will maybe help us, set the tone for this program. But this is very early on, and this is in his chapter called The Two Winstons. And so he refers to Winston Churchill as Winston, and he refers to George Orwell as Winston. He says, on the surface, the two men were quite different. Churchill was more robust in every way. He was born 28 years before Orwell. He outlived him by 15 years. And we'll, as we go through this, you'll find out that George Orwell did suffer, from pneumonia early on in his life, and then that really did cause him problems even as an adult. But here, he was born after Churchill, but Churchill outlived him. He says, but in crucial respects, they were kindred spirits. In their key overlapping years in the middle of the century, the two men grappled with the same great questions, Hitler and fascism and Stalin and communism. And it was America and its preemption of Britain. And so here, when you read 1984, remember we're reading by an author that lived in the 1930s and the 1940s, and there were very tumultuous times in this world. And they were living in the times of, the growth of fascism, but also the growth of communism. And so this was what was, affecting them. It says, they responded with the same qualities and tools, their intellects, their confidence in their own judgments, and even when those judgments were rebuked by most of their contemporaries. And, he says, and their extraordinary skill with words. And so one of the things that we know about Winston Churchill is he loved language. And, there are many comments about him that he took the English language, and he's like, he formed it like an army, and he sent it forward. And that's just a That's not an exact quote, but he really did love language. He was very much enthralled with the English language, with English words and how they sounded. And he worked very hard to put them together so that they made it was almost like poetry in action. And he would use the different words with the same meaning to get his points across. And he was very effective that way. Well, the thing with George Orwell, he's also, became an expert at writing, and he's very precise in his writing, and yet he can get a picture across very simply. And so but they did have this extraordinary skill with words. But notice what Ricks also says. He says, and both steered by the core principles of liberal democracy, freedom of thought, speech, and association. And so if you look at the problems that both men were dealing with, if you look at, it seemed like it was Winston Churchill that was really the one dealing with Hitler during World War II and the growth of fascism. But then George Orwell saw the problems with communism. And, of course, that's what we experience in, 1984. And, it's like totalitarianism and what it does to people's minds and what it does to their lives. And so that's what we're dealing with here. They were really very concerned about personal freedom. It says their paths never crossed, but they admired each other from a distance. And so, that is really, I think, just an interesting fact of history. Now, Ricks goes on and says, despite all their differences, their dominant priority was a commitment to human freedom. And that gave them common cause. And they were indeed vastly dissimilar men with very different life trajectories. Churchill was flamboyant. He was an extrovert. He had skills with speech. And he had an urgency, especially during World War II, to defend the country. And, of course, he did, lead really the British Empire. And, of course, the American army, contributed to it. But he really did shape our world today with that. I mean, we are a free people today because, well, Churchill stood up to, everybody that was against him, and he let people know that we had to really stand up against Hitler. Now, Orwell, he was a different kind of man. He was kind of an unemotional. He was very calm. He was very introverted, but he had this fierce idealism. And he has, a devotion to accuracy and observation in his writing. And, what he wanted most is to make sure that the world would stay a private place for people to have their privacy. And so it is really, really quite interesting that way. So today what I want to do is I want to just give you a few snapshots from not only Winston Churchill's life, but also George Orwell's early life, so we can better understand why and how they wrote the way they did. So it really, I think, is a kind of a fascinating thing. Now, to start this off again, I want to give you another quote from this book by Thomas Ricks. And again, I'm really enjoying the book and reading it. And he's talking about the two men together now, and he's comparing them almost compatriots, though they never met each other. Says, together in this mid-20th century, these two men led the way politically and intellectually in responding to the twin totalitarian threats of fascism and communism. On the day that Britain entered World War II, Churchill stated, "It is a war viewed in its inherent quality to establish on impregnable rocks the rights of the individual, and it is a war to establish and revive the stature of man." Now, Orwell, when he was talking about communism, expressed it this way. Orwell expressed the same thought in his plainer style. We live in an age in which the autonomous individual is ceasing to exist. And he wrote that 2 years after Winston Churchill wrote what he wrote. So both Orwell and Churchill, they recognized that the key question of their century ultimately was not who controlled the means of production, as Marx thought, or how the human psyche functioned, as Freud taught, but rather how to preserve the liberty of the individual during an age when the state was becoming powerfully intrusive into private life. And of course, even in our time now, even under the last the previous administration in the United States, there was a lot of people really concerned that the federal government is now really intruding into private lives. And of course, there was all kinds of scandals, how people were being spied on and being watched, and of course, the term 1984, came up quite often. And even today, with the whole rise in, it's kind of like the obsession with political correctness. It's like the suppression of individual thinking. It's the suppression of, individual expression. And so those things, are really happening for us today. Now, one of the things that I think is very interesting, and of course, if you know anything about the background of Churchill, you maybe should be familiar with this, but when the Depression hit in the late 1920s, I mean, Winston Churchill had developed a small fortune, but he actually had put it into the stock market in America, and he lost everything in that crash. And so he would go on these, world tours of speaking, and on December 13th, 1931, he was 57 at that time. He was still a member of Parliament, but if you know anything about that history, he was really not very welcome in his own party. He had stepped out of the Conservative Party for a while, then he stepped back in, and they didn't trust him or anything like that. But he was coming to New York to speak, and he stepped out of a taxi in New York on Fifth Avenue. And what happened is he was hit by a car and dragged, several feet. And what Ricks brings out in the book, thankfully he was able to recover from that. He had a few cracked ribs. I think his leg was pretty much sliced up. But if Winston Churchill had died in 1931, what would have happened to our world? I mean, if he wasn't there to, stand up to, the British liberal press and, the British liberal society that, they wanted to make this agreement or this pact with Hitler, where would we be today? And there's a few, British writers that have written dystopian history. And what if Hitler had won? Where would Britain and America be today? But certainly if Churchill had died, he'd probably have some memory, in history. But the fact that he didn't die and what happened in World War II, he really has become one of the great men of this age. Now, it's interesting that if we look at the life of George Orwell, in May of 1937, he was actually working as a soldier in the Spanish Civil War in northeastern Spain. And he had already started writing, but he was really not a writer of much consequence. And I guess you could say his early novels were really kind of mediocre. Now, at that point, he considered himself a leftist. He was really kind of into socialism, and he was really studying the poor of England. But essentially, what he realized is that he ended up criticizing socialism because of what socialism was doing to the poor in England. But anyway, he was in a war, and he was in a battle, and he woke up that morning, went out to the battle, and he was shot in the neck. And the bullet went right through his neck, and he realized he was hit. But he actually... he lived, and very few people would ever be shot in the neck and live, but it missed one of his arteries, and so he was alive. But what Rick brings out, what if he had expired then? And we would never have the book 1984. And there's so much of 1984 that really, you know, it's really entered into the, you know, into the, let's say, the common language. I mean, everyone knows what Big Brother is, you know, even I remember at one of the Super Bowls not too long ago, maybe just a couple of years ago, Apple. I mean, this is one of the most fascinating commercials, and that's really why I watch the Super Bowl. I don't really care about football, but I do like the commercials. But if you remember, they gave this, they used, you know, this big television set in their commercial, and there was someone was going there to destroy it. It was like Big Brother was watching you, but it was their commercial, and it's probably the most famous commercial, you know, that has ever been made. But it was all based on the book 1984. So, you know, what's happened there is really entered into, you know, our psyche. It's entered into the culture. But it is interesting that George Orwell is not his real name. His real name is Eric Blair. So I can't imagine reading a book by Eric Blair. But, you know, George Orwell just sounds very interesting. And what he did is he took it from a river in England. There's an Orwell River. And so that'll give us a little kind of interesting way to look at these two men. But I thought that was an interesting perspective. And that's a big question that Rick's asked is, you know, were these two lives preserved for us? I mean, think about it. Were they preserved for us so that, well, we could have been delivered from Hitler, or, you know, we could have a concept of freedom, how to be totalitarianism and, you know, mind control and you know, the invasion of privacy. And that's what 1984 is all about. It's very definitely not utopian in scope. It's very dystopian. So I just think that's an interesting perspective that we want to look at. Now, if we look at their history, one of the things that is maybe we should say is they both grew up in the British Empire. And if you look at Winston Churchill, and that's what I said, I would really like to read his book, My Early Life. It's really a kind of a short autobiography. I mean, there are other ones that are like 3 and 4 volumes long. We would never be able to do that on the radio. But we know that Winston Churchill really did grow up in a very difficult, you know, family settings. And he brings this out somewhat in his book, My Early Life. But here's what Rick writes, and of course, you know, his biographer really wrote a lot about it. But Winston Churchill did not have the best family. And it is amazing that a child that grew up in the family life he did could come out on top. And, you know, this is what Rick brings out in the book. This is in his chapter called Churchill the Adventurer. Parents who treated a boy as Churchill's did might nowadays be accused of criminal abandonment. And it's not really too harsh to say what happened. Said his father, a rising man in the Conservative Party, appears to have barely spoken to this son of his. Writing decades later, Winston could recall having only 3 or 4 long, intimate conversations with him. And then, like I said, in other biographies, this is really talked about. While at school in Brighton, on the seaside about 60 miles south of London, Churchill was chagrined to read that his father had traveled there to give a speech but had not stopped by to see him. He wrote to his father, "You never came to see me on Sunday when you were in Brighton." And so he really did grow up in a tough time. Well, Orwell did the same way, and I just realized we're getting short on time, and of course this always happens to us when we have a lot to say. Next time I'll continue my introduction to George Orwell's classic dystopian book, 1984. I do want you to remember that we will be using the Signet Classics edition if you haven't bought it already. It is available at Amazon.com for about $8. And that's for Prime members. If you're not a Prime member, it's going to be about $10 with the shipping added. But if you go to abebooks.com, you can find the book for about $6 and get a very good copy. So please write me any comments you may have to jbl@pcog.org. You can follow JBL on Twitter @JBLiterature1. You can also follow JBL on Facebook. Please search for Just the Best Literature. And remember, you can leave me a comment at Facebook. So until next time, keep reading.
You've been listening to Just the Best Literature on Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG, streaming online at kpcg.fm and thetrumpet.com.